Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Hey, welcome to Bob, Dave, and more, 710 ESPN Seattle, and also 710sports.com. It's Dave Wyman. Bob is on vacation, taking a day off today, and we have Jim Moore, and filling in, Shannon Dreyer, Mariners insider, and really, as I have touted her in the email before the show, the one, only one at the station that really knows anything about the Seattle Mariners, Shannon Dreyer. Shannon, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing okay. Don't let Mike Salk hear that.
Well, I'm just saying it to stick it to Jim, actually. But and the text before now, I asked this question: am I going to have to put you two in timeout at some point? Are we going to get along today? Or I know we all love each other here, but let's keep
Dave,
it nice.
David, yes, all Jim. Depends on Shannon. I never start these.
Oh
things.
No. I know you don't.
I'm never at fault.
Perfectly
or never
innocent.
To blame. Yeah, it just
sweet
depends.
Little Jimmy.
Yeah, if Shannon gets condescending with me, that's when you know I get a little irked and fire back. So,
Shannon,
I'm sorry
is
he's
silent.
So sensitive, and I'm sorry that you have to put up with that sensitivity every day. But you know what? It's been a while, and I think I can take it.
Okay, yeah. We know you guys are good friends that go way back. But sometimes, and everybody, you know, when you text in, they're just joking, okay? Until Shannon blocks Jim on Twitter because she's had enough, then you know it's gone a little bit too far. But I don't anticipate that it'll go that way today. Right, Shannon?
Probably around hour two, he will be blocked.
Okay. That was still one of my favorite responses ever. When Jim asked you, why did you block me on Twitter? And Shannon simply said, I had had enough. And I just, that's one of the quotes that I'll always remember from our station. And my career as a broadcaster is just fantastic. But today on the show, we have Ryan Divish coming on at 3:30, John Clayton at 4 o'clock. And then at 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock, who we have as our special guest is Shannon Dreyer. Because, Shannon, we have baseball. And you wrote something on mynorthwest.com, or you can go to 710sports.com. And the 60-man roster has been set, and we're going to possibly play baseball, it sounds like, on either, what is it, July 23rd or 24th. Not sure about that. Not sure where the opener is going to be. The season, 60 games long, ends on September 27th. Many surprises, Shannon, when you look at that 60-man player pool that the Mariners released?
Not really, because when you're dealing with 60 players, there's room for a lot of players. But what I think was most notable with what the Mariners did was the number of young players that they put on there. Baseball America came out last night and said so far, not all the teams have released their rosters as of yet, but the Mariners, they saw the Mariners as being the most aggressive with that. And we heard from Jerry Dipoto that is what they were going to do, because that was pretty much the only opportunity to get any of their minor leaguers any kind of work. And they so value those prospects, and they're so important to the process and everything going forward, that he wanted to get every prospect he could on that roster of what will ultimately be 34. So when you look at that, it's not surprising that you see your Jared Kelnicks and your Julio Rodriguez's, and even go all the way down to a Noel Villamarte, a shortstop prospect who is still a ways off, but they actually put four of the most recent draft picks. One of them just signed a couple of days ago. They finally got all of them signed, completed today with Connor Phillips inking his deal. But it's the only way that they can get them to work. You had four of the top draft picks from last season on this taxi squad, too. And there's little to no chance that they will see big league action. But what they're going to get is they're going to get the opportunity to go down to Tacoma and work with the best that the development staff has to put down there, because they value them so much. And also play intra-squad games. And while you think, well, that's not going to be too competitive, you're going to have guys that were pitching in college 3 months ago all of a sudden going up against guys who have been in the big leagues and could be in the big leagues the next day. So the competition will be interesting to see what they actually get out of that. But, you know, there's a good chance it'll be better than what they would have seen at Everett this year.
Well, yeah, that's what I was wondering, Shannon, about Cheney Stadium, you know, with the taxi squad down there. I know the development maybe won't be what it would have been if they'd been playing minor league baseball, but still, it seems to me like they're making the best of a difficult situation.
I think they are, and I think it's it. And I did a podcast with Howdy last week, and he is absolutely bullish on this. He'll go so far as to say that he thinks they will get more. The prospects to go down to Tacoma will get more out of what they can get in these 66 days and then the complete spring training. They will train over at T-Mobile Park with everybody else, but it remains to be seen. But when you think about that, they're going to be around players that have been in the big leagues, players that are more advanced in the minor leagues. There's no other situation where they would have that opportunity other than a couple of weeks in spring training. So, you know, there's a chance that they can get a lot from that. One of the questions I love to ask players when they're first called up is, you know, what were you interested in seeing if it's a pitcher, how your stuff played against a big leaguer? These guys are going to get that opportunity. And I think that that's going to be very valuable for them to take back to wherever they go once everything gets back to, quote, normal.
Hey, so, Shannon, how many spring games did we get in? Was it like 10 or 11, I think, before this whole thing shut down?
No, I think it was more than that. They were pretty close to they were about a week away, I think, from breaking camp.
Okay, I was just looking at somebody who had played in 11 games. I think it was Evan White. But yeah, and so now, you know, they're going to have spring training, basically continue it for a little while there. As far as the intra-squad games, are those typically laid out like a regular game? I remember watching them down at spring training down in Peoria, but are they going to run nine-inning games? And what do you expect those to look like? You said, you know, it's probably going to be pretty competitive.
I think it is, and I don't know if there'll be nine-inning games, and if you look at it, well, they're not going to have two full rotations down there, so I'm not sure how they're going to work the pitching for that. They're also going to, you know, they could be challenged at different positions as well, but they will simulate it as much as they can, and then they can throw in things for incentive, and they can make it more of a team thing, or they'll do sometimes a situational type game where perhaps, you know, you might think, oh, a home run is the best thing. Well, not if you pull it, you actually lose points for that. They can do things to kind of set things up, and these guys, I don't care if it's a team in other uniforms across the way or not. They're athletes. They're competitive. And I've seen some of these games. You can, if you really kind of get them fired up and put enough into these games, they will get fired up themselves and they'll take them very seriously. So I think that, you know, there is something to be gained out of it. I don't know at this point what the format will be.
Shannon, what do you think about the six-man starting rotation? Are there a lot of teams doing that? I imagine there are, and I imagine we're going to see pitchers going two or three innings at first. And it's a good opportunity, though, for Justin Dunn, because I don't think he would have been part of the five-man rotation, and we're going to be doing daily profiles of Mariner players, and we'll be looking at Justin Dunn later in the show.
Yeah, I don't know if the Mariners are actually the only ones that I've seen that have come out and stated that they're going to go six-man, but I would imagine that others will probably do it too. It's going to be, you know, it's 60 games, which is very different, but there are only going to be six off days in that time. So the schedule's going to be a little bit more condensed, and with travel, and if there are any kind of rain makeups or anything like that, all of that's going to be a challenge to the pitching as well. So I could imagine we could see that. We'll see some piggyback starts where you have one starter follow another, perhaps each go three innings. But I think some of these guys are going to have a chance at being a little bit more stretched out. All six of them have thrown bullpens. Some of them have thrown quite a few bullpens. Justin Dunn and Yusei Kikuchi come to mind. They were both down in Arizona for the duration of the shutdown, and they did get into the facility in Peoria on the first day available. And from what I understand, both of them were up to 40 to 60 pitches. And they'll probably have about three, the equivalent of two starts, maybe three in when they resume the spring training. So, I don't think, you know, if they're economizing their pitches, I don't think they're going to be limited to just three innings in their first start. I think some of them will be able to go a little bit further, but they're certainly going to allow for those that need more time and take no chances on that end, because it's a big question mark on what this is physically going to do to these players.
Yeah, Shannon, before we throw it to cut number one with Jerry DePoto here, basically talking about starting spring training over, you mentioned the piggyback start, so you're going to see some starters appear in the same game. Maybe not that, but do you think out of this 60-game season, we're going to see some innovation come out of this? Maybe something that they do that they normally wouldn't do that sticks in uninterrupted seasons.
Well, I think that one of the things you'll see, and you've heard already, that if they get into extra innings, they're going to start with a runner on second base. And I really hope that doesn't carry over. I don't think that's going to carry over. I think that's just a mechanism to get people out of the ballpark and limit time and exposure when they're at the park. But when you look at that, we don't see a lot of bunting. At that point, do you bunt that guy over to third base? And then it's an exercise. Can you get a deep enough fly ball to get that guy in? So that's going to be very different in coming up with how you deal with that in that situation. The DH, probably going to see it in both leagues from now on, I would suspect. And that's going to change the look on the National League side. It's going to change their numbers. That's going to change everything. And there's a good chance we've seen a pitcher hit for the last time, unless his name is Shohei Ohtani or a couple of other two-way players that are in the minor leagues that perhaps could come up at some point. So I think that is probably the DH is what most likely we see carry over. But the things that they're doing right now aren't as much, and we heard early on that maybe they would try and push in as much of the innovative stuff. We heard about the robo-umps and things like that, but I think that when push came to shove and with the situation the way it is right now, everything that's been put in place has been put in place with health and safety first and foremost in mind.
Shannon, what do you think the National League reaction is going to be? Because, you know, we talked to Michael Bradley back in Philadelphia every Tuesday, and he hates it. He just talks about the managing strategy and how much he loves that, the double switches and everything. But you think there's going to be some pushback from National League teams on not wanting that?
No, because it's another player that gets a good job. You know, that's something that the players, that's a gift to the players' side, and all of the back and forth that, you know, hopefully we stay away from for a little while. It's not fun. But I think the players in particular are all for it because it's another bigger paycheck potential right there for half of the league.
Yeah, and DJ, if you could, play cut number one, Jerry DePoto talking a little bit about starting over with the spring training.
We do, to a certain extent, have to start from the beginning. But we're going to do this a little differently than we've ever really done spring training before, because we'll be working in smaller groups. It will be in Seattle and solely at T-Mobile Park. And we're going to move cautiously and make sure that as we go through this 3-week spring training, that once we get to the regular season, our first and truly our only thought through this is our players' development and their continued health and well-being. And we're going to focus on those things. And that could be anything from the obvious, which is their physical health, or, you know, with the pitchers, their arm health, keeping the soft tissue issues with our position players. There's a lot to manage, and it's going to put a lot of stress on our staff and our training team.
Yeah, that's one thing I was thinking about, Shannon. I mean, I know that you always say that baseball players are so ritualistic, and, you know, but as far as I'm just looking around at the people that I know, like all of us during the shutdown, and my friends, my neighbors, we've put on weight. Okay, you know, and I just think that, you know, you either are going to come out of this in like really good shape, and like you said, the players are so dedicated to their craft and everything, but, you know, I do kind of worry about the injuries, just because, you know, it's disruption of the normal flow of what these guys have been doing for so long. And I wonder if, you know, more than COVID-19 tests being positive, that we might see possibly more injuries.
Yeah, and I think DePoto was referring to that as much as anything. COVID-19 is a huge concern, and let's face it, as they come in and take tests, because of what's going around the country, you're going to see positives. That's something that, you know, up to this point has been tough to prevent. But I think also with the muscle injuries, and particularly in the core type injuries, anytime you have an oblique, they're so sensitive. And athletes, as you know, Dave, are so finely tuned that it's something that, you know, it's a precise science in what they do and what they're able to do and how they're able to get out in the field. And while everybody has been working out during the shutdown, they haven't had everything available to them that they normally would have available to them. And, you know, in that regard, there are so many guys that work out with trainers, and they can do different things because they do that. And you know, trainers that are so, you know, well-versed in kinesiology and physiology, and that's kind of one of the edges right now that get them to what we are accustomed to seeing right now. So for them to go back and do the things that they were doing in the past without that foundation, that's a little bit of a scary thing. And when you look at this, I kind of originally envisioned it or tried to liken it to, well, it's as if the entire league is coming off the DL. I know it's the IL, but that just sounds silly. The DL at the same time. You know, it's not like players haven't been shut down for this amount of time, but when they're coming back, I mean, they're watched like a hawk. They have somebody on them the entire time. And it's not just what they're doing out on the field. It's the preparation to get out onto the field and the recovery and the assist that they get with that after. So because of that, you know, I don't care how many bullpens you've thrown or how many at-bats you've had, they're going to be nervous about all of that because just that extra level has not been there for anyone. And for some, it's been worse than others. There are people in different parts of the country that just haven't had access to anything. Mitch Haniger, so many questions about him. And when I talked to him about a month ago, he hadn't been able to go see a physical therapist. And with a core injury, that's the kind of injury where you take one wrong move in your rehab and you can set yourself way back. They're tough muscles to isolate, tough muscles to train, tough muscles to heal and to build back up. And it sounds like everything went okay, but they won't know until they get him in front of them. But basically, you're going to be looking at every player like that. So I think it's a smart approach to look at that, and not just with the pitchers, but with everyone. Hitting is so rotational, and that's where, you know, one oblique strain could put you out almost for the entire season. And teams are going to be, you know, hard-pressed to come up with guys to fill in if the COVID numbers turn out to what they possibly could turn out as well. So what's a little bit more controllable at this point would appear the preparation, being able to, yeah, you look pretty good, but we're still going to limit you to this the first few times out.
Shannon, what about Haniger? Last week, I was speculating that we may never see him in a Mariners uniform again. Maybe that's going too far. But when he does come back next year, I don't anticipate he's going to be back based on what you hear from Service and DePoto this year. I mean, what's the sense in playing him this year? And then when he does come back, it'll be basically 2 years since he played. He'll probably be 30 or 31 by then. Maybe I'm a little off on his age. But what do you see happening with his future? Do they need to get him back in a uniform so that they can trade him, or do you think he's done here in Seattle?
Well, I don't. It's a tough one, and if it had been a normal situation, I would say probably not. We don't know what arbitration is going to look like in the offseason, and that's going to factor into it as well. We don't know what teams are going to be willing to take on in the offseason either. So, you know, maybe teams will look at him and the number will be lower and they'll think, you know, in this situation, it's worth taking a risk rather than going out and trying to pay big dollars when I don't think anybody's really going to want to do that. So I don't know what that market is going to be. But with placing him on the 60-day IL, which is actually a 45-day IL in this situation, and it began is retroactive to yesterday, he will have probably 40-plus games available to him to play. And I think they just attack that as you would any player toward the end of the season where we'd really like to get him out on the field and get him past that, okay, I can go out there, I can go full speed, and I can trust this injury right now and set him up going forward. I'm not sure there's much that they can do with him as far as trades go at this point. And you don't know what you're going to see in the off season when it comes to players that are under club control. There are a lot of players that will probably be non-tendered. And that's kind of a prediction that's been out there that you could see as many as 300 non-tendered in the off season, which would be just absolutely horrific. And it would flood the market. In a normal year with the Mariners, you might see two or three from a team non-tendered with 30. That's 10 plus. So I don't know, but I think that if they feel they can safely get him out on the field, they're going to want to see what he has got out there and also want others to see him as well.
Well, I told you, Shannon, we were going to pepper you with questions and interrogate you, and we've got some other clips to hear to listen to later from DePoto and Service, and maybe we can talk about that at 5 o'clock. But right now, it's time to take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Cam Newton has signed a 1-year deal with the New England Patriots.
That's a big deal for Maura Dooley. I can't wait to hear what you think, Maura. You know, it's funny. They were just playing, and I think they were playing a replay. I think it was 2015 when Cam Newton came in here and shredded the Seahawk defense for about 300 yards. I'm with you, Maura, and I saw your text that, look, I think he's a good player, but the leadership part of it is, you know, he does a lot of sulking when things go wrong, and, you know, that leadership, and how do you think he's going to get along with Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I think pretty much being out of the game for as long as he did, and now he's 31 years old, you just hope that maybe it humbled him a little bit. Plus, I don't think Belichick is going to leave much room for any of, I don't know, some of the past antics.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's a great signing for the Patriots. I think most people agree, even if you're not a Patriots fan, you look at that team with Jarrett Stidham and I remember him at Auburn. The Cougs played against Auburn. I don't remember him being all that special. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm thinking, man, we're back in the AFC contention here. We might go back to the Super Bowl. And Cam Newton, if he's healthy, I mean, he's one heck of a player. And here's one for you, Dave. I actually agree with Richard Sherman. It's kind of ridiculous that Cam Newton is getting paid what he's getting, a veteran's minimum, with incentives to perhaps make as much as $7.5 million. But still, a guy of his caliber only making $7.5 million. When you look around at Chase Daniels and Taysom Hill and some other backup quarterbacks, what they're making, I agree with Richard Sherman on that one. It is ridiculous. And maybe after 1 year that Newton can prove that he's truly back at the age of 31, he'll be back in the $20 to $30 million range next year.
Former Mariner Mike Leake and two Nationals players, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross, are among the first MLB players to announce that they will opt out of playing the 2020 season.
Yeah, so, look, I read both of their release, well, Zimmerman and Leake, both, and I think it was Zimmerman that said he had a mother with underlying conditions and things like that. I'm not questioning their decision, because it's a personal one and a family one. But the one question I have on this is, isn't the environment that you're going to be in Major League Baseball possibly safer than, you know, what we all go through every day? I mean, I was on a plane. I went to a restaurant that was, you know, 50% capacity. I have not been tested. You go to Home Depot, you go to the grocery store, you go to the mini mart, and there's people with masks, there's people without masks. Some of the masks don't look like they're very effective. And yet in Major League Baseball, there's going to be testing and they're going to take care of these guys. You know, just it seems like to me a safer environment. Now, you're probably going to interact more, you know, but still, it seems like a safer environment for me for these players in Major League Baseball than it is just going through, you know, your everyday life, going to the store and whatnot.
I think the thing, Dave, is, though, a lot of those players weren't going through everyday life and going to the store. A lot of the guys that I talked to over the last couple of months were staying home completely, having things delivered to them, and just really keeping it to a minimum how much they went out. And they're getting tested every other day, so that's not surefire. And they're also leaving the park. They're away from the park, around their families. And my question to you, and this is going to be one of the biggest challenges for everybody, would you trust every single one of your teammates to go home and do the right thing?
Yeah, probably not. But I guess, you know, I feel like the risk is a lot less for, you know, the younger players. And, you know, and we did a thing the other day, like the Clemson had like 27 positive tests on their football team and none of them were sick. But that does mean they can spread it to other people, and that's why you keep them away from, you know, the older people and people with at risk. But I don't know. I guess I would have to look at the odds and the percentages of what I thought would be, you know, where I'm. And when you're younger, obviously, you're a lot more reckless, right? And like your point, Shannon and Jim, you know, you're trusting a bunch of, you know, 20, 21, 22-year-old guys to go home and not, you know, go out and be exposed to it. So, yeah, it's a difficult question. But like I said, it's a personal one. And if those guys decide to do that, that's up to them.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if any Mariners opt out in light of Mike Leake opting out and then Ryan Zimmerman. So I'm sure there's going to be more players, maybe some big-name players, and maybe our next guest could fill us in on some of that too.
Yeah, well, that's a great transition right there, Jim. You know what? You should run the show, because coming up next on Bob, Dave, and More with special guest Shannon Dreyer, we've got Ryan Divish. We'll talk to Divish about maybe other players possibly opting out of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. That's next on Bob, Dave, and More.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and More. Dave Wyman, Jim Moore, and Shannon Dreyer filling in for the vacationing Bob Stelton. We got Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times on the phone. Divish, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Has Shannon yelled at Jim yet?
Not yet, but I threatened to put both of them in timeout if that happens. But no, they've been very cordial to one another, so it's been very
smooth. It's been boring.
Well,
yeah. I mean, we need to be confrontational here a little bit.
It'll ramp up. Okay. Well, we'll see. Maybe not during Divish's segment, though. Divish, let's get right to it. We just were talking about Mike Leake, Ryan Zimmerman, Joe Ross opting out not to play this season. Do you think other veteran players are going to follow suit?
I think you'll see some. The incentive, I think, for guys that have made their money, and especially guys that will be a free agent going into after the season. I don't know that they have the incentive to play for some of them. You know, they'll find a way to get a job, I think, one way or the other, and they probably have the established money. I think with Mike Leake, there are some factors with Mike Leake. You know, he did have shingles. He's had some health issues in the past. And then for a lot of people that just don't know, Mike's dad was building a log cabin for Mike in Montana. That's kind of what he did, was a home builder. And he fell and broke his back and is paralyzed. And so, you know, when you have that kind of traumatic injury, it puts him at risk. And I think, you know, Mike interacts with his father a lot and didn't want to have, you know, run that risk of that as well. So I think there's a lot of factors. And for players that do have kids that maybe are asthmatic or, you know, have health issues, it's something they definitely have to be concerned about. I think if I was a player at this point, given the uncertainty and instability of some of these cities and even just this whole return, I think I would just be better off having the family stay home and going to the city where I'm going to play at for the 3 months and going on my own. Because, you know, as well as I do, if it shuts down, then you're going to have to go back anyway. So I can see where players are going to sit out if they have the ability to do so. And I can see where a lot of players are going to not bring their families with, which was the whole thing that they were against when it came to sequestering in Arizona.
Ryan, they've got, I think, about 118 pages between two different manuals and safety precautions that they're going to take, and it seems like they've got every T crossed and I dotted when they're at the park, but then they leave the park. And I asked Dave this a couple of minutes ago. Yeah, I think the question comes down to is how much do you trust your teammate with your health? I mean, how realistic is it to think that everybody's going to do the right thing, or that teams are going to be able to dictate what they do, or that veteran players are going to be able to lean on other players enough to make that safe?
I know you asked Jerry about that on our conference call, and you're perfectly right. I mean, you're asking players to exercise of a level of responsibility that a lot of them don't. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, for a lot of these guys, they have money, they have time, and they go and do things, you know, and going out, going to restaurants, things like that. And it's also not just trusting the players, but it is trusting the players' families. If players bring their families or significant others with them, then you're asking for those people to have a level of responsibility as well that, you know, you don't know about either. And I think we've seen that, you know, with some of these LSU football players and some of these college athletes that, you know, there are large groups of them testing positive because if they didn't kind of abide by what the university asked them to do to come back and do these workouts. And I think that's going to be a problem. I, you know, there is a trust factor, and I don't know how many of those people, you know, you would trust. You know, we always kind of joke about the Mariners, like the old days of the guys going out all the time post game are kind of gone. Most of these guys are still young, and a lot of them are married young, and one of the players jokes that all they do is sit in the room and play Xbox at night after games are over. They don't go out to the bars or anything. So maybe that's what they'll do here, but that's been an issue, certainly.
So, Divish, are you guessing it's 50-50 whether they even get the 60-game season in?
Yeah, I'm just seeing how things are going in certain areas, I wonder if they'll ever get it off the ground. I do know that, you know, the resources that MLB is putting into this and the amount of testing and all the stuff, and like Shannon said, the manuals and all the requirements, I think they're going to give it, you know, the best opportunity for it to succeed. But we just, you know, if there's a huge outbreak on one team, or if these cities get to be too bad, I just don't know whether or not baseball can stand, you know, withstand that and do that. But I think we'll get some games in, and I think it'll be kind of cool. But the idea of even the postseason in October, it just seems pretty far-fetched to me. But again, maybe things will change. You know, I thought the idea of not having a season or waiting this long to start one was pretty absurd, and baseball found a way to do that too.
Ryan, if it does go off, we talked about this the other day. Guy I'm most excited to watch this year is Kyle Lewis. Just, you know, what the first three games that he played in, hit a home run. I think that's only been done once before. Trevor Story, his family was there. I love his story, everything. Who's the guy that you're really looking forward to watch and play baseball on this team?
I think, you know, obviously seeing Kyle is a big deal because, you know, Shannon and I both remember what happened to the kid and what he's been through to get back on the field and you know, the attitude that kid showed and kind of the persistence that kid showed to get back. I mean, he never was down. And so you were always kind of pulling for him. So I'd like to see that. Plus, he's just really talented. You know, the raw power he shows. But I'm very curious to see what Evan White is like, the nicest kid in the Mariners organization. I think, you know, watching him play defense in spring training it's just a joy if you like that. You know, it's like watching Olerud even better than Olerud because he's so athletic. And I'm curious to see what he hits like because, you know, that kid works really hard and he's so likable. You want to see him succeed. So he's probably one of the guys I most want to watch. And even somebody like Braden Bishop, who had last year stolen from him by injury, I'd love to see him get some time out in the outfield and run around and show that he can be something more than he's shown right now because he just hasn't had that opportunity to play because of freak injuries.
Hey, Ryan, I don't think you have the answer to this, and it might be putting you on the spot a little bit, but there were, if you do the math, it seems four teams that voted against the 60 game and would have gone with the other proposal. Do you think the Mariners with the younger players were one of those?
I don't know. It's weird. I know, and I'm sure you heard as well, that the Mariners were very frustrated about the draft situation and that ownership wanted to pay, you know, at least the 10 rounds. When you're picking sixth overall, you want that. I know the Mariners are very frustrated that some of the owners were against that and they didn't want to do it. You know, they obviously put out a united front, but, you know, I was told that I could see that maybe the Mariners wanted something different. I mean, like, from a financial standpoint, the Mariners aren't getting hit in terms of payroll like some of the other teams. Heck, I think most of their payroll is going to guys not on their team. You know, most of the guys that they have on their 40-man roster, other than D. Gordon and Kyle Seager, are not expensive players. You know, even somebody like Yoshi Hirano or even Carl Edwards Jr., their free agent pickups, Kendall Grayman, Taiwan Walker, these guys are not expensive players. They aren't hurt maybe as much by payroll as some of the other teams. So I think that they might have been one of them that wanted to play more games because ostensibly they need those games to see what these players are. Even if it's 10 more games, it's still better than, you know, they need to know who these guys are. This whole plan of their rebuilding I think has been sidetracked or slowed down to a pace because they're just not getting games. And you don't know. They were thinking that Evan White was going to get 500 plate appearances this year. Shed Long, 500 plate appearances. Justice Sheffield, 20-some starts. You know, Justin Dunn, 20 starts. I mean, they're not going to get that. And that experience and that kind of growth that they were expecting just isn't going to happen. And that's going to hurt them, I think, in the long run.
Divish, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And stay safe out there.
Yeah, I always knew Shannon was coming for Jim's job, but maybe she'll just take Stelton's job instead.
No, I was coming for Jim's dog, not his job, his dog.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Right. Well, which one? I got two of them now.
I have to leave scenic Montana, so it's going to be tough. My mom was against baseball restarting because she liked having me home.
I'll bet.
I'll be back.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. All right, Ryan. Thanks a lot, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
There he goes, Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. Coming up next, oh, reminder, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's Marco Gonzalez's complete game in 2018, brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. So coming up next, Shannon didn't get a chance to chime in on Cam Newton. She had some thoughts, him going to New England. We know Mora does, the Patriot fan, but was this a good move by the Patriots? Should the Seahawks maybe have considered him? We'll talk about that next on Bob, Dave, and More with Shannon Dreher filling in.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim More.
Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and More. Dave Wyman, Jim Moore, and Shannon Dreher. And as we talked about in Take 2, Cam Newton reportedly signing a one-year deal with the Patriots yesterday. League minimum, $1,050,000 with incentives that could be worth up to $7.5 million. And one of the things that was talked about, and I remember Colin Cowherd talking about, you know, that Cam Newton would have been a bad signing here as a backup quarterback. And, you know, and he referenced some things that, you know, that in him and Russell's past or something. But to me, it wasn't so much about that. It's just that I don't think Cam Newton is ready to be a backup quarterback. And first of all, I love watching Cam Newton play. I mean, I like the fact that he tries to put his head down and run over linebackers. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, he gets hit hard a lot of times. And I think he has a case for complaining about getting hit too much, but he delivers a lot of punishment. And I've always admired that about him. Being down on the field in Carolina and watching him jog by, he is a monster. It is amazing how much bigger he looks in person. But also, I just, you know, I think he's an underrated passer. You saw what he did against the Seahawks up here in that game I referenced, 2015, and just shredded him. Ended up finding Olsen open in the end zone for a touchdown to win that game. But I think being a backup quarterback takes a special kind of person, and I don't think he's there yet. And I think it's interesting to note all the backup quarterbacks that have become coaches in the NFL, just to name a few: Jason Garrett, Gary Kubiak, Kellen Moore is now the offensive coordinator for Dallas, Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and it just takes a certain kind of player. It's difficult to be a backup quarterback. You kind of have to humble yourself. You have to you have to be prepared as the starter, as if you're going to go in, and yet not get very many reps in practice and probably not get in the game. If you're playing behind Russell Wilson, you're not going to get in the game. So I'm kind of excited to see this signing in New England, and it's going to be interesting to see how him and Bill Belichick get along and how that develops.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dave, you look at that. I mean, Cam Newton, number one overall, and you're right. I don't think if you're him, you're thinking, well, I'm not a backup quarterback, and I don't think anybody looks right at Cam Newton and thinks, oh, yeah, his skill level has fallen off. He's a number two guy now. I think everybody realizes that it was just the injuries that caused him to not be playing. And so, yeah, I just think it's a great signing for New England, and I was a little surprised that, yeah, as much as I love Gardner Minshew, I thought maybe Jacksonville would go after him, or anybody that had, I mean, Chicago, they went after Nick Foles instead of Cam Newton. It's just kind of crazy. And so, yeah, I think New England really came out ahead on that one. And it's going to be fun for Seahawks fans, too, although we're going to just be watching at home on the flat screens when Newton and the Patriots come to town for the first home game, Sunday Night Football there in September.
Got a question for you guys. I mean, is this a situation where the deal gets done? It looked like it was a pretty big shock to everybody. Is everybody looking at each other saying, well, what did the Patriots see here? Did we miss out on something?
Yeah, it's a good question because, I don't think Cam Newton's a problem child or anything like that. I mean, he's said some things in the media to people that hasn't been great. He didn't handle his post-game, interview at the Super Bowl. But, you know, to me, I try to look at what he does out on the field. He will yell at his teammates and kind of light them up, but Yeah, I don't know, man. He's a guy that's kind of a mystery still to me. And my only problem, I like the way that Mara put this in a text to me. She said he's always been kind of a sore loser. And I think that is the case with him, but that's the leadership part of it. Maybe he becomes something different, you know, maybe Bill Belichick. Here's the one thing I'd say, though, Shannon. I feel like, and Chuck Knox used to do this, I think a lot of head coaches in the league have like a father complex. Like they think, hey, I can bring this guy in, I can mold him, and I can shape him, and I can, you know, make him do things the way we want to do it here. And they have a pretty specific way of doing things in New England, and I'm not sure if Cam Newton's going to be able to fulfill that for them or not. Maybe it does, but I wouldn't say I would be shocked, but I'd be surprised if, you know, because I guess the thing in New England is that, you know, no guy, I mean, they're kind of like Penn State, you know, how Penn State, they don't put their names on the back of their jerseys. Like they're always a bunch of no-name guys. And that's not so much because they don't have good players. It's just kind of the culture there.
Well, Dave, haven't you always felt like he's a good time Charlie, as you put it?
Yeah. Yes, I have. I mean, he will get up and celebrate and everything. And then when things go poorly, and that, you know, it's funny, I got caught. I didn't know we were on air when we were in Carolina a couple of years ago. And I'm like, I was just talking to Rabel and O'Connell, and we're, you know, during the broadcast. And I was like, oh, look who's sitting down at the end of the bench with a Gatorade towel over his head. And sure enough, it was Cam Newton because they were getting beat. And, you know, I've just seen that kind of sulking from him. And look, quarterback, like I always say, it's an extension of management. It's an extension of the coaches. You know, you'll never see a quarterback out with the guys drinking beer and complaining about the coaches. You know, that you have to be really close to them, you know, and they're different. You know, they're not one of the guys. And that was one of the things that was always complained about with Russell Wilson, that he wasn't one of the guys. And, well, you're a quarterback. They're just a different cat, you know, and so That'll be interesting to see if Cam Newton can be, you know, play that role for a guy as strong as Bill Belichick.
Well, Maura, let me ask you real quick, since you're a Patriots fan, you've been following him for a long time. What do you think the feeling is back there in Boston today? I imagine people are head over heels for this one.
Yeah, I think that as much as you want to trust that you have no reason not to trust that Belichick knows what he's doing, there's still some uncertainty with Jared Stidham, so it just feels like, why not go and get a former league MVP who's been to the Super Bowl? Like I said, I think in the past, I've just kind of questioned, I think Russell Wilson and Tom Brady have that quality of rallying guys when things get bad. I've always felt like Cam Newton gets a little pouty. But, you know, he had some trials and tribulations the last couple of years with injuries and everything, and maybe he's grown a little bit.
Yeah, let's DJ, if you could play cut five, Tim Hasselbeck had a comment on what the Patriots offense could look like with Cam Newton.
I think it'll look drastically different. I think there will be elements of the passing game that remain the same, and then the run game will basically look like New England's run game, except for it's that run game plus one, because now the quarterback's a ball carrier. I mean, that's what it'll look like. Dominique referenced a good offensive line. They have been tremendous at situationally running the football for over a decade. Now they have the ability to run the football, same scheme that they've been running the football with for years. But now they just have an extra player as a part of it because the quarterback's the ball carrier. So, look, Cam Newton has 58 career rushing touchdowns. I mean, it's ridiculous. So when you look at that, you're just going to end up seeing, look, from 2011 to 2018, he's got more rushing touchdowns than Marshawn Lynch. We're going to see New England run the football with their quarterback, as well as their backs, but they're going to run it with their quarterback now.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch because, yeah, I've always said, I mean, look, that's the difficulty of that, a guy like Russell Wilson. I mean, a typical running play, it's 11 versus 10. But when the quarterback's running the ball, it's 11 on 11. It gives you an advantage. There's some special things you have to do defensively in order to stop it. And I just don't know if his age is going to allow him to take the pounding that he did when he was younger.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't think they're going to run him that much. But, boy, that's one of the strong suits of his game. I was just looking. He's rushed for almost 5,000 yards in his career, Dave, 600 yards a year.
Amazing.
So that's really a nice facet of his game that Belichick will probably want to use.
All right. Well, coming up next, we'll talk to the professor, see what he thinks about that. Also, the Patriots, they're in trouble again. They did something illegal. There was a sideline filming incident. Sorry, Maura, had to bring that up. But we'll ask the professor if there's anything to that. John Clayton is next on Bob, Dave, and Maura.